I'd like to bring Dae-hoon back. This is his last meeting, his last chance in front of the committee. I believe we have a standard operating procedure that you're nice to the staff on their first and last visit. So, but before he starts, I would like to personally express my thanks, and I hope it's on behalf of the committee, for the work this gentleman has put in, both in view of the committee and in the background in helping us deal with some tough problems. So I'd like a vote of thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, and this is paper number
18. Yeah. Agenda paper 18 deals with mandatory tender offer, that is MTO, to NCI holders in business combination. In some jurisdiction, the local laws or regulation require an entity who acquire a controlling interest in a listed company to initiate an MTO to NCI holders to buy remaining interest at the same price or higher. The submitter thinks that it is not clear whether the MTO should be accounted for as a part of business combination or as a separate transaction. The first issue is whether the initial transaction and subsequent MTO should be treated as a separate transactions or as a single transaction. View one is to account for two transactions as a one single acquisition. The offer to the NCI holders is a mandatory requirement triggered by the acquisition of the controlling interest. The acquirer cannot avoid making the offer. From the acquirer's perspective, it can be viewed as one deal. View two is to account for the two transactions as a separate transactions. Each transaction is economically justified. In the example of paragraph 5 of this paper, the objective of the first transaction is to obtain control over another entity, and it is also the result of a separate negotiation between acquirer and the previous controlling party. Also, the subsequent purchase from NCI has economic substance on its own and is accounted for as an acquisition of NCI. We noted that IFRS 10 provides guidance of when to account for two transactions as a single transaction when a parent loses control of a subsidiary. On page 4 of this paper, these factors could be very helpful when assessing these transactions. It is logical to apply the same factors regardless of whether an acquirer obtains control of a subsidiary or a parent loses control of the subsidiary. The second issue is whether a liability should be recognized for this MTO. View one is not to recognize any liability. The statutory obligation to perform an MTO does not represent a contract between the acquirer and the NCI holders, because a contract requires agreement between two or more parties, but an MTO is only an offer until an NCI accepts. Under IAS 37, no liability should be recognized because IAS 37 excludes executory contract from its scope. When the offer is made, no party has performed any of its obligations. That is, the entity has not paid for the shares and the NCI has not delivered their shares. View 2 asserts the entity has a liability. Because this statutory obligation is not different from a put option granted to NCI, which would be recognized as a financial liability. We think that this statutory obligation to perform MTO does not represent contractual liability under IAS 32. The statutory obligation is a type of non-contractual obligation. We think that an entity should apply IAS 37 because no other standards deals with that kinds of statutory obligation. Therefore, this statutory obligation, for this obligation, we think that the entity should recognize a provision if the recognition condition are met in accordance with IAS 37. We do not agree with the view that classify this statutory obligation as a contractual obligation. For issue one, we propose additional guidance to apply the same factors to both an acquirer obtaining control of a subsidiary and a parent losing control of a subsidiary as provided in this Appendix A to this paper. For issue two, we also propose additional guidance to recognize a liability under IAS 37 to clarify the accounting treatment for this MTO. Any comments?
Andrew?
Well, I agree that it's not a liability under IAS 32, but then I struggle with it saying it's a liability under IAS 37 because there's no contract until the contract is accepted. So until that point, you know, there's nothing to account for. It's executory. That would be my view.
Guido?
I'm fine with the first issue. I think it's a linked transaction. I just want to bring something to the table that I think it's in Europe, maybe also in other jurisdictions, that this is not only an issue when you acquire control and then have to acquire non-controlling interests, but it's another issue in Europe when you acquire more than 30%, then you have to do the same mandatory offer to the others, which is also an issue because if it's a linked transaction, you acquire control, then you would not have a step acquisition if it would be a step acquisition. So if you have two linked transactions, so maybe we can think about this other issue too. I think it's in a lot of jurisdictions that it does not only apply when you have control that you have to do a mandatory offer, but if you acquire more than 30%. So that's on view one. I agree with you on the linked transaction classification. On the other thing, I share Andrew's concern. It's very formal to say it's not a contract, and that's why it's not an executory contract, and I recognize the liability, especially when you think a little bit longer down the road. You make the offer, and you say it's not a contract. Now, some of the non-controlling interests, in your example, agree to the offer, then you have a contract. Would you then reverse the liability back up until you're actually acquiring the stake? I mean, your argument would not hold up until from the time on when the non-controlling interest holder agrees. So then you have a contract. And then you would say, okay, then I am in an executory contract under IAS 37. I would not recognize the liability. So the liability you recognize at first would be reversed.
That's a forward contract to buy your own equity.
Scott?
Wouldn't we book that when we enter into it?
I mean, it is once there's a contract, once somebody's accepted the offer.
Guido was saying once somebody accepts the offer, then we no longer have an IAS 37 liability, so that goes away. It does, but I think it's replaced by an IAS 32 liability of an equal amount.
Okay. I'm not sure, though. Would it be an equal amount?
Well, it might be higher.
If we were measuring it under 37, we would take into account, I would have thought, probability.
Yeah, that's right. So it might be
32
higher.
Does
it might be higher under 32.
32 would be the full nominal.
So if we take into account probability, would you then say, let's say you acquired 60% in your example.
Yes.
With your argument, would you then set up a liability for, let's say, another 15% if you're expecting 15%? Or always for the whole 40?
15.
I would have thought 37 would have been 15.
37 would say.
But I'm still having a problem saying if it's a contract, then don't recognize a liability as long as it's not onerous. But if it's not a contract, you have to recognize a liability. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Scott, did you have something else you want to come in on, and then we'll go to Laurence and Andrew?
I did. First, I applaud the staff's goal here. I mean, I think the goal is
to get you to have to recognize goodwill for all of the amount that you buy in the linked transactions. So good goal, but I'm having trouble getting there. In the ordinary course, if a company that already owns 60% of a subsidiary makes an offer voluntarily to the other 40% and is required by securities laws to honor that offer if somebody accepts it within a period of time, which is the case in the U.S. if you make a tender offer, well, we're not going to require them to estimate as soon as they make the offer the number of shareholders that are going to accept the offer and book that as an IAS 37 liability. So I don't see why we would do that when you have when you're forced to make an offer either. It's still just an offer. And I can't get there to recognize that IAS 37 liability. So I like the result of booking the liability because I think it gets the better answer for the amount of goodwill that has to be recognized. But the logic of getting there just seems a bit too far.
I think you would, if you are in a linked transaction, it doesn't really matter whether you recognize the liability up front. If you would acquire another 20 or so percent, you would say it's a linked transaction. You would still recognize goodwill for this 20%.
Yes, we get there eventually.
That's correct. Yes. So we're saying that you might take the view that, yes, it's a linked transaction, but it occurs over a period of time, and that you only book liabilities for those acceptances that you receive when you receive them, but you would still look at the whole linked transaction for determining your goodwill.
Fair enough. It's the end of the year coming in the middle that causes the problem. Yes.
Andrew?
If you're going to look at it as a linked transaction but book no liability, I think you end up with a dangling credit in equity. I think there is no liability, therefore there's no transaction, no linked transaction. And if you're worried about the goodwill point, which I guess is at the heart of this, you could, one way around that is to say that the NCI has to be valued, in these circumstances, has to be at fair value rather than the proportionate share of net assets, because then you get the right goodwill number. But I just don't see, there's no contract, there's no liability until the NCI accepts the offer. And therefore, I don't see how you can link that into an acquisition transaction if there's no liability.
All right.
I disagree with the staff views on both issues. I do not believe there is a linked transaction because I do not believe that the requirements in IFRS 10 for linked transactions are met. You first acquire control, and you make a deal with a seller to acquire control of an entity. It happens that your local regulations oblige you to also launch a takeover bid for the rest. But they do not form a single transaction as designed as such. The transaction initially anticipated was taking the control. And indeed, if nobody accepts the offer under the regulation, the first transaction still goes on without the other one. So they are not dependent on one to each other. The subsequent purchase of NCI can take place only if you take control, but you can still take control even if the NCI rejects the offer. So they are not bound in such a way to be a single transaction.
Fair enough.
And so this is why I do believe they are not linked transaction. Secondly, I completely share the views that have been expressed that these non-contractual arrangements, so we are not in the scope of IAS 32. I don't see how you can say you are in the scope of IAS 37 or how IAS 37 plays a role here, and in addition, I still don't understand the mechanics for even if you were to say that there is a liability to account under IAS 37, I don't understand the mechanics. In your examples, you whip out NCI, you count as if you had acquired 100% of the entity. Where does that come from? And so if you say, I'm going to estimate that 15% of there will be a 15% acceptance of the offer, I have a liability for that, goodwill for that, but what do you do with the NCI? So you whip out 15% of the NCI that still have NCI roles, and so on. So it is inherent in IFRS 3, which has an option about how to measure NCI. You don't have that problem, effectively, if you measure NCI at fair value, because the goodwill amount is full amount. But it is an inherent problem in IFRS 3 that if you consider that it's not linked transaction and you're not in IAS 32, then that you have the outcome we have in treating two separate transactions and repurchases of NCI.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the play?
That was a very U.S.
That's a very U.S. joke. I'm sorry. Charlotte, you were wanting to get in.
I think I had difficulties. I agree with Lawrence on the link transaction, but it didn't feel like it met those criteria. I wasn't sure they were necessarily the right criteria, but it didn't seem to meet those. But I did feel that you had an obligation, and my instinct would have been that it felt like a put option. It should be treated like one, and I actually quite liked the way the staff got to the same answer. It seems to me that if, in the event that that share price has changed, it feels that you should be recognising that obligation. So.
Luca, and then I have kind of a question.
I share the point, and I agree with the point that we are making in the discussion regarding to the recognition of the liabilities according to EAS 37. I'm also on the line that there are no many chance to recognize this according to EAS 37, and I have found difficult to detect the liabilities. It seems to me that with reference to this point, we are more or less in the same cases, or in one of the cases that we have seen in levies, in which we have some elements that, or better, we are still in a problem of measurements versus recognition criteria, because the obligation events is, in my opinion, the moment in which the NCI has accept to make the transfer of the shares, not the fact that there is a law that established you to present and to launch a tender offer on this part of shares.
I guess the question I had was, it seems to me that the link is already there. The law establishes the link. So if I enter into a transaction to acquire 60%, I cannot avoid taking this next step. So why isn't this, not to minimize it, the same thing as payroll taxes? The law imposes certain taxes on me as a consequence of writing paychecks. And the obligating, I don't worry about the obligating event. It's just one of the cash flows that I take into account in measuring the transaction that's called paying Michael's salary. Why is this more complicated than that? Well, but my point is that the law imposes on you an obligation to do something.
It obliges you to make an offer.
Scott?
I'm going to sound a little bit like a diva here, since I'm going to say this and then leave to catch my flight. Yeah. But thanks. I think the difference is that the payroll tax is an additional amount you have to pay for what you already got.
Okay.
The service.
That's fair.
Whereas you're going to get more if they accept the offer. I agree with you on the link transaction, though. I think that if we actually come to an answer that these transactions are not linked, there's a bunch of legal frameworks that disagree with us, right? The law is that absolutely they're linked. So, I mean, I'm comfortable with the linked transaction, but I think the payroll tax analogy doesn't hold because you're going to get more later when they accept.
Guido?
Hope your flight is on time this time, Scott.
Well, actually, I almost wish it was delayed a half hour so that I can finish the meeting.
So I agree with the diva. It's a linked transaction. I mean, if you're acquiring more than 60, more than 50% or more than 30 in Europe, you know that you have to make this offer. So for me, it's a linked transaction. And even if I look at the criteria in B97, I still don't see why you would not come up with a view that this is a linked transaction. So I agree with you on that. And then again, I share the same view as Scott has just said. I don't see that that's a liability under 37. It's an executory transaction. It's not a contract, I agree with you, but an executory transaction. And I would look for guidance then into 37, which says as long as it's executory, you don't have a liability. So.
I just want to ask you something on that notion that it's an executory contract, and that is, what is it that you're getting in return? Because as I see it, if the offer is accepted, you will receive shares in one of your subsidiaries, because we're talking now about acquiring NCI, and that is not an asset, that is own equity. So what is it that you're receiving in return? There is no asset that's going to be recognized on your balance sheet.
I hate to answer with another question. So would you then say if you are in the 30% situation, you're acquiring something and the accounting should be different and you should not recognize a liability but should recognize a liability here? I mean, I agree from a formal point of view, you are right. You could say because I'm controlling the company, I'm not acquiring something that I'm not controlling already, but I'm not talking only about control but also the benefits that you get out of it. I'm talking about dividends and so on and so on. That's something that you acquire. It's a benefit that you acquire.
So I'm drawing the analogy or the comparison with an NCI put, where I see the obligation as being identical, in that a counterparty that holds shares in my subsidiary can require me to deliver cash in exchange for those shares. So the obligation is identical. It's just the legal form is different. It happens to be. The legal form is statute rather than contract.
I think that's exactly the problem that we have, because 37 and 32 have this different views on when to recognize a liability. 32 tells you if you have to pay out something, cash or a financial asset, it's a liability. It doesn't matter whether it's an executory contract or not. My understanding is we are not in a contract. We are not in 32 here, and 37 has a different view behind it, which is not the best way for a standard deal with it, but that's the way it is. And I think, again, I don't think that under 37, I firmly believe we are in 37 here, we are in a contract. Everybody agreed with that, I think, that you should not recognize a liability because it's an executory transaction and you don't have a contract, so you don't recognize a liability up until you have a contract, then you are in 32.
John?
I mean, I think it's a linked transaction. I think it would be helpful to add guidance to IFRS 3 about linked transactions and gaining control. I'm sort of more troubled with what's the actual liability, because as Guido pointed out, I mean, if you're in 37, you don't get liability, but you're not in 39. But I do think the right answer would be to account for these the same as written puts. I mean, I agree with what Charlotte says, they're really no different in written puts, and I think that's the appropriate accounting. But I don't sort of get there by using IAS 37, and I think you're not in IAS 39.
Hey, Long.
I agree that the issue it should be addressed, and I'm intention of taking it as a link transaction. But I do have a concern about the recognition of the liabilities. If we take it as a link transaction, part of the liability may be under IS 37, but other may be IS 39. But it looks like the view on the how to apply in the in practice, apply the accounting in practice for the on the lien transaction and IS 37 not very clear.
All right.
I'd just like to have clarification. So if we are in a case where you say no liability, but it is a linked transaction, so what's the accounting once that option somehow is exercised? So you credit NCI and you debit goodwill? So you increase goodwill? What's the accounting? The fact that you say it's linked transaction,
yeah.
What's the accounting subsequently? I'd like to understand.
You can see the page 22. So there is an example of the journal entry. So in this example, they are using equity credit, but
why do you say to record the acquisition of company B assuming the MTMO will result in 100% ownership? And then you just downwards say, but finally it's 85%. No liability in transaction. I really didn't understand that example.
So in this example, so this equity will be cancelled in the next journal entry. So if we think about the characteristic of the equity, so one of the issue is how to determine this obligation as a, to classify as a liability or equity. But in this case, our proposal is to, this is not a equity, so it should be classified as a liability.
Yeah, but that I disagree. That it seems to me that we say it's not a liability. There is no liability to be recognized at the time of MTO. But I'm trying to see whether there is a difference in between what I think the answer is compared to when you say it's a linked transaction, because I heard Michael say, well, you had control because you got the 60%, so effectively some exercise and you have to repurchase them, so it's a repurchase of NCI. So for me, repurchase of NCI is just against equity. But so my point is, how does that affect the goodwill amount that was determined when you first to control with the 60%? Or is goodwill going to be changed?
So if you had 60% before year end, another 15% after year end, and it's a linked transaction, really it's a acquisition of 75%. And so you'd be able to complete your accounting in the following year once you've got all of the information, and you'd be able to reflect that 75% subsidiary.
So basically, instead of debiting equity for the repurchase of NCI, you are debiting goodwill. You're increasing goodwill.
So you do increase goodwill. Absolutely. Yes. You can't, I don't think you could anticipate the additional goodwill to begin with, but certainly you would reflect it afterwards.
I'm not certain that we've fully answered Guido's question. Matter of fact, I am certain that we have not, which is I understand where we're going. If I acquired control and now I'm buying NCI. But 30%, in most circumstances, we wouldn't say is either de facto, it certainly isn't de jure, but it probably isn't de facto control. So I'm not sure I understand if we say this is a linked transaction, but I've only acquired 30%, what I do? Please.
Oh, I was not expecting to get an answer. No, I'm just saying that this is another issue where we have the same transactions going on, and it is of importance because there is a difference whether you look at it as a linked transaction. Let's say you have 30%, you acquire another 30%, then it's a business combination in one step. If you say it's not linked, then you have a business combination in steps, which step acquisition, which would then have a charge to P&L because you have to revalue the 30% or so that you have acquired before. So I think we could apply probably the same. If our solution is at the end of the day that it's a linked transaction, I would expect that we would come to the same conclusion for the 30%. And also the accounting for the liability, I don't see any difference there. We just have to apply the solution that we have for applying control to acquiring more than 30%. So I don't think that there is a huge difference. I can think if we still have the two questions to answer. One is it a linked transaction, and do you recognize a liability? So it's same questions for two different transactions. And I would also think that if there is no liability and then you have an additional 15%, you just add to goodwill because it's a linked transaction. So you would debit NCI, credit cash, and debit goodwill in the next year for the 15%.
Charlotte?
Oh, just one question. If it's a linked transaction and your first part of your transaction is a contract to buy your 30% or your whatever, couldn't you regard the additional bit as being part of that contractual arrangement? And so then it becomes, you have to apply the sort of contractual liability rules.
Well, that was what I was trying to say, and I didn't work.
I don't really see a difference to the issue we have here now. You could also say if I acquire 60%, the acquisition of the additional 15 or whatever I get is also part of this contract with the 60%.
And I'm going to find that.
Yeah, well, I don't think that that's right, because I only have a contract for the 60%.
But the other bit's implicit in it. The other bit's implicit. It's triggered by the fact you've got a contract triggers that other obligation, so it really is part of the contract.
Well, that's the same for, as I said, there's no difference between the 30% or the 60% example. It's always the question is it a contractual obligation? Is it a liability? Or first, is it a linked transaction? And then, do you have a liability? Mm-hmm. I don't see a difference in these two transactions.
Okay. For the end of the day, we have the advantage of two binary questions. First one is it a linked transaction? How many people believe it's a linked transaction? Okay, that's a clear majority. How many people think it's a liability, given that it's a linked transaction? Kind of one and a half. Two. How many, I'm assuming everybody else thinks it's not a liability.